It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
A bomb from Thomas.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Boston Celtics post-game show on CLNS Radio. Ty Ray joining you tonight along with Calvin Chamberlain and Nick Cicento behind the glass producing our show. We'll hear from him as well. Let me take care of some business before we get into the Celtics 108-101 loss at San Antonio. We are the online, CLNS is the online provider of audio video coverage for the Boston Celtics. Find us on your radio dial at ESPN New Hampshire 900 and 1250 AM up in the Granite State and streaming live at ESPNNHradio.com. Also, got to take care of this business. Our opening segment is powered by Blue Apron, whose mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Did you know the cooking together builds strong family bonds? Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. Now, for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals in perfect time for the holidays. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/CLNS. You will love how good it feels, tastes, to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Again, that's blueapron.com/CLNS. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. I'm sorry, guys, I extended that so far, but boy, I was kind of delaying the inevitable here, talking about a Celtics loss to the San Antonio Spurs. They had came into tonight's game having lost 10 straight to San Antonio. Tonight they fall on the road 108-101. They never led, really. They led briefly in the first quarter of play. They had a small lead, and then San Antonio went on a run and took over. And really, I'll be honest, even when the Celtics made that run in the third quarter and pulled within 1 point, I think it was on a Crowder three, I never felt the Celtics had a shot in this game. San Antonio, how good did they look tonight? It seemed like every time there was a timeout, Pops called up a play, they scored a key basket. When they needed somebody to come up big, either it was Pau Gasol making a clutch shot. How about Tony Parker? Guy comes in averaging less than 10 points a game, a career low for him. Goes off in the fourth quarter when the Celtics might have had a chance in the contest, and time and time again, he had a clutch hoop. I think he was 5 for 6 in that fourth quarter of play. If you want to get in on the conversation, feel free to do so at 347-215-7771 to talk about the Celtics' loss tonight at San Antonio. Boston falls to 13-12 on the season, and I'm already getting the sense from Celtic Nation that panic has already set in. Even though last year, you may recall at this time, the Celtics kind of lingered around the 500 mark before kicking it in gear in the second part of the season. But I'd like everybody in Celtic Nation to kind of get a grip. Yes, there's some things that disturb me about this team and some bad habits that I don't like as we're 25 games now into the season. But there's a lot of good things to like, and we also have to consider that this team has played a brutal schedule, been on the road, and has played, I would say, a majority of the schedule without the main rotation. So tonight, playing again without Isaiah Thomas, hopefully he'll be back as he's nursing that groin injury. Hopefully he'll be back at home on Friday night when the Celtics take on the Hornets. And having said all that and talked too much, I'm going to bring in my co-host Calvin Chamberlain tonight. And Calvin, I just want your first impressions of tonight's game at San Antonio.
Well, it's funny because you sound pretty optimistic. I'd be interested in a moment to know whether or not you believe in moral victories and whether this is one, because I've sort of been having the moral victory conversation. I've been doing a couple of the last few games, so you can imagine moral victories are bound to come up. But, I think my first impression is just, you know, you look at the talent that was out there on the floor in this game for San Antonio, and you look at guys like David Lee, who's a guy who, you know, couldn't crack the Celtics rotation a couple of years ago, and he played 30 minutes tonight. Tony Parker, athletically, you know, is clearly in decline. Pau Gasol is certainly in decline. There was no Aldridge tonight. He was a healthy scratch for the Spurs. and you look at their bench in – yeah, they got a lot of young guys, but nobody who blows you away with talent. I guess the thing that stood out to me the most in this game was just the execution of the San Antonio
yes.
Spurs, the way they run their offense, the extra passing. They seem, you know, a common refrain from the Celtics lately has been that they don't really seem to congeal well together and know what the role is for each individual person, especially without Isaiah in the game. But the Spurs always seem to know like what the other players are going to do. You see them finding each other for easy baskets. You know, Kawhi created most of his offense for himself, so I think he's the one exception. I thought the Celtics actually played him well defensively, forced him into a lot of tough shots, but he's just so strong that he calmly, you know, fought his way through good defense and hit fadeaways and jumpers and shots that would be bad shots for almost any player in the NBA. So I think their defense on him was fine. I would take some issue with their interior defense shots, and really take some issue with their rotations as well.
Alvin, I'm with you on this. Now, 2 years ago when you and I would host a post-game show together, I would take heart in the moral victories and say the Celtics played tough and there's a lot to like. We're past that stage now. We're at the stage where this team has said it's going to be one of the elite teams in the league, and clearly it's not there yet. Yes, as I pointed out in the beginning of the post-game show, the team has been without key parts of the rotation. Let's face it, they have played a brutal schedule. They've played many games away from the Garden. But enough already. I see some trends here that I don't like. I don't like the reliance on the three. I don't like their lack of execution on the offensive end. Boy, did that show up tonight, Calvin. You really pointed that out to us when you talk about how well the Spurs come out of timeouts, how well they pass the basketball, how much they get people involved. I just don't see that with this team. I just don't. I mean, there's some great, maybe that's overstating, individual talent in Bradley and Horford. But there's some just nice players on this team. I still think they're a player or two away from being in the upper echelon. And in a night like tonight, boy, does it stick out that this team has got so far to go. I have a recommendation. Calvin, I'd like your thoughts on this. And I don't want to play stir the pot tonight. That's not really what I want to do. But just giving it the eye test tonight, can we just say that it's time for Terry Rozier to step up and take a place of a Marcus Smart? I just see a better upside all around in his game. Even when Smart does something well, it seems like it's ugly. I'm just kind of over – I hate to say it, and I hate to pick on him, and I know other people on the show do as well. But I just don't think Marcus Smart – is the answer, especially when somebody like Isaiah Thomas is out. I'd like your thoughts, Calvin.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And it can equate
to... Ah, we lost Calvin.
I'll get a hold of him on the call line and let's see if we can get his mic fixed.
Okay.
So, Ty, if you want to
take over his diatribe
for a second.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. In the meantime, let me open up the call lines. Let's do that. Let's open up the Movement Watches call lines at 347-215-7771. Again, that number is 347-215-7771. The phone lines are brought to you by Movement Watches. While department store watches are what, $400-$500, the good folks at Movement Watches have taken the middleman out and are passing the savings directly to you. Movement Watches are slick, fashionable, and more importantly, affordable, starting at just $95. Go to mvmtwatches.com/Celticsbeat for 15% off your first order with free shipping. That's mvmtwatches.com/Celticsbeat. And Calvin, we have you back?
Yes. Yeah, so I don't know how much of that you caught, but I've been arguing, you know, there's this refrain going around Boston, or there was after Isaiah got hurt and they immediately smashed the Orlando Magic. I guess the Sports Talk hosts were all coming out and asking the question, are the Celtics better without Isaiah? And I find that to be a ridiculous question.
I do too.
They're obviously not better without Isaiah, right? But I'm getting to a Rozier point here. Just follow me here for a second. while that is definitely not true, they're not better without Isaiah, part of me feels like Isaiah's injury, considering the fact that it's a minor injury, is a good thing for this team in a way, because they're overly reliant on Isaiah Thomas's
yes.
ball handling. And when somebody, you know, when teams put a bigger defender or a bigger defender who's also fast enough to stay in front of him, like we saw in the playoffs last year when Isaiah couldn't get off, the Celtics essentially had no plan for what to do in the fourth quarters of game. And I feel like the problem with this team right now, as much as everyone, you know, talks about the fact that they don't have an interior shot blocker, to me the bigger problem is that they simply do not have enough ball handling. And I think the fact that Isaiah Thomas is hurt, we're seeing Rozier get those minutes and they're trying to develop him into that guy. I don't think that he's quite there yet. I think particularly his vision when, you know, he gets near the rim is not really good for passing it back out to the guy at the three-point
yeah.
line. Obviously, he's got a quick handle. He's got, to my mind, a higher upside at this point. I wouldn't say that he's straight up better than Marcus Smart, but I think that you still need Marcus Smart for the defensive things that you want to do. Rozier's definitely not quite there as a defender, even though, again, I think he has the potential. He's quick, and he makes good decisions sometimes, but I think in team defensive concepts, he sometimes loses the ball. We saw that on that alley-oop.
Sure.
Parker, we see it a couple of times where he just sort of loses his man in the chaos that happens on the court, even though on a one-on-one basis, he's not a bad defender at all.
I think what most disappointed me tonight, we'll get back to that conversation on Smart versus Rozier. I think that's been gone over and over again recently. I think what most disappoints me tonight, Calvin, as a fan, to be quite frank, is that you look at LaMarcus Aldridge. I'm a huge fan of his. He's a great player. Spurs decide to rest him tonight. To me, if you're Horford, if you're Amir Johnson, or you're any of the guys on the block, you've got to be licking your chops at the fact that Aldridge is taking the night off. And in the first half, the Celtics' front line was woeful. I don't know what Amir Johnson ended up with. I think he had like one rebound in the first half. Horford was abysmal in the first half. And I think Horford ended up in the long run having a decent game. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But you would think with a LaMarcus Aldridge out of the game, you wouldn't count on being outplayed by David Lee. This is the second time this season that David Lee has been one of the best players on the block in a Celtics-Spurs game. And I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And as much as I like Al Horford, I there's just something I think missing in his game so far with the Celtics. What do you think, Calvin?
Well, yeah, I think the problem with Horford, and really this was another problem that I had with the Celtics overall last night, the problem with Horford is that he's simply too conservative sometimes.
Yeah.
I feel like Al Horford, and you look at his passing numbers, they're at, you know, the highest point of his career. I feel like every time they put Al Horford at the elbow, something good happens. Avery Bradley is so good at cutting off the ball, and he found Horford found him multiple times in this game. The Celtics Smart's a pretty good cutter off the ball. If you just put Horford at the elbow, he's going to get defensive attention, and he's going to be able to find someone with the ball or pull up for himself for that mid-range jump shot that he's awesome at. But I feel like so often he's either camping at the three-point line, which I don't have a problem that everybody seems to have with that necessarily, because I think that it is good when you have a guy like Gasol and you sort of have to pull him away from the rim. But my problem with that is they're not even doing that, because the Celtics played – I don't understand why they played such a weirdly conservative lineup in terms of Horford not playing center. Like, why do they spend so much of his minutes out there with either Tyler Zeller with him, Amir Johnson with him, or I know you love him, or Kelly Olynyk with him, when the Spurs were, you know, basically for the majority of the game either playing Gasol or for, you know, several minutes David Lee at center? There's no need for the Celtics to you know, counter that. I understand Gasol's a good post player, but Horford's going to guard him anyway. So why do you clutter your offense down, or more importantly, your defense down with a slower player, when you can run Horford and you can run Jay Crowder at the four? That to me is their best lineup, and I don't understand why we're not seeing very much.
I don't know either. And I don't know, Calvin, what the infatuation is with the three ball. Yeah, I know the Celtics have a number of players that can shoot it pretty well. But I think it takes away from the Celtics' ball movement. I see a lot of people standing around. That, to me, was not the hallmark of the Brad Stevens teams that I became intrigued with. I love the passing. I love the hard work. And the idea of just coming down and shooting threes, to me, what that does is create – maybe I'm wrong here. Please correct me if I am, but almost like a laziness on offense, such a willingness to rely on the three-pointer. Whereas in the past, I thought this team, to me, the hallmark of a Brad Stevens coach team was hard work and ball movement. I don't see that anymore, Calvin. I really don't. Maybe I'm being too harsh. I just don't see that, though.
Yeah, here's my problem with that criticism. And it's funny because I got into an argument with Chelso the other game, when he complained about the Celtics taking too many three-pointers in a loss, in which the Celtics hit, you know, 17 out of 43s. They hit 40% of their threes.
Right.
In this game,
that's good.
I felt like the threes actually got them back in the game. My thing about the three-pointer situation is, look, I don't think this team has enough ball handling. I don't think they have enough, creators able to create offense for other players. Isaiah can do it when he's out there, and when he's out there, he does do it. He goes into the lane, and he scores. But other than that, who on this team is, you know, an above-average scorer in the lane, a guy that, you know, can cut to the rim? Avery Bradley is a good shooter. He's worked his way into a good shooter, and he's a good cutter off the ball. But do you really expect Avery Bradley to consistently cut to the hoop and then find somebody else? Yeah, he's not going to be that guy. So when you say you don't want as many threes, like, you can't really replace that with scoring at the rim, because this team is not built for scoring at the rim. So I don't understand what people really – I mean, Horford is
right.
Complaints about Horford are valid, but Horford, I think to expect Horford to be, you know, a 30-point-a-game scorer, I just don't think that's fundamentally in his character.
No.
You can criticize him for that if you want, but I think he does enough things that it's hard to really put that entirely on his back. But other than that, I do think that he should be getting more post-touches. There's no question about that. I mean, you know, Gasol took advantage of Horford several times in the post. When in my head, I was like, Horford, you could do the exact same thing to Gasol. I don't completely understand all aspects of Horford's game. Like, he should be a good rebounder, for example, but he's never really been that. I don't completely understand his mentality. But other than him, I don't really see what the Celtics can do in terms of improving their offense, other than, you know, creating more turnovers, which goes back to my complaint about them being too conservative. They clearly were trying to get back, constantly trying to avoid the fast break, giving up easy rebounds to the Spurs because they were afraid of getting burned in the fast break. And I think that also applied to the way they played. And I think that they're trying to avoid turnovers, they're trying to spread the floor, but they don't have enough creators to get the kind of looks that you want them to get.
Is this team, in your mind, Calvin, better or worse than they were last year? Or is that a fair question, considering they haven't been able to play with the rotation on a consistent basis?
You know, it's really too early in the season for me to make that point definitively, whether or not they're better than last year's team. I think they struggle a little bit out of the gate last year before finding their
right.
way?
Yeah, as I kind of pointed correctly. Out. Yeah, they were like at 500, I think, about this time last year. I'd love somebody to call us up and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they kind of they flirted around 500, I think, halfway through the season, if I'm not mistaken, through the first 40-some games, and then they kicked it into gear after the All-Star break. But, you know, they haven't had...
I mean, they certainly...
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, if you're asking me if are they playing better than they were last year... I don't feel that, but I mean, is
no,
Al Horford better than Jared Sullinger and who else did they lose from last year? I can't even remember right now. But
yeah, Sully is the only one that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I think that Horford is an upgrade over Sullinger without question. So their roster is better, but they're not playing better. I think that there a lot of guys aren't playing as well defensively as they played last year. Crowder, I'm still not sure if Crowder is completely healthy or not, because he's definitely not the defensive player he was last year.
No.
He seems significantly slower on that end. And last year, Crowder sort of had, you know, it was awkward, but he had a surprisingly quick first step for a guy his size. He would, you know, do this, that sort of awkward rumble into the lane, and it worked for him, even though it sometimes looked like a Tony Allen going to the rim situation. He got plenty of buckets that way.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. We were talking about guys that could get to the hoop, right? The Celtics don't have that many. Last year it was Crowder, I always thought, slashing awkwardly to the hoop, sometimes getting an N1, and he would drive to the hoop consistently. Now I just see him settling for a three-point shot. I don't see him taking anything off the dribble. So that goes to your point that they really don't have anybody right now that can penetrate. Let's bring in Nick Sesento in the conversation. What do you think, Nick?
Well, I think it's interesting, two observations based on what Calvin said, and I agree completely with your observation about Jay Crowder, Ty. And this kind of ties into both of what you guys are saying. It's interesting to me that Calvin correctly points out that we don't have, you know, a true ball distributor. Even with Isaiah Thomas in the lineup, he's always looking to shoot first. He is the one player that can drive and get to the hoop pretty much at will and can finish when he gets there. Some of our players have difficulty finishing. His difficulty is that he may not be big enough to kind of see some of those, you know, outlet passes when he gets himself into trouble amongst, you know, the trees to really pass the ball out and find that open shot, although he does it occasionally. But what I find interesting is that these past several drafts, Danny Ainge has drafted Marcus Smart, he's drafted Terry Rozier, he drafted Demetrius Jackson, who is one of the few players from this draft class that is actually on the active roster, although he didn't get into the game today. And we're still talking about how we don't have legitimate ball handling or legitimate ball distribution on this team. And
yeah.
Then when we look at Jay Crowder being our, you know, our wing player who definitely looks a step slower, who's settling way too much for the threes and not really, you know, crashing to the basket the way he normally does. That also ties in with the fact that, and I know nobody in Celtics land wanted to pay Evan Turner $17 million a year, and nobody wanted to commit to him for 4 years, and I'm not blaming anybody for that, but that's really, I think, what this team is missing, a Dellinger, who is the one, you know, the other player that we lost in the offseason, but we're really haven't found a player that's filled that, you know, that role that Evan Turner filled, where when it comes down to playing the half-court game, when you need somebody that can set up, you know, the players that can handle the ball, distribute the ball effectively, and can also slash and get to the rim like Evan Turner did, we don't have anybody that does that. And I think Evan Turner was that one player that really brought the best out of Tyler Zeller and Kelly Olynyk, who both scored 40% of their baskets last year. I saw a statistical breakdown.
Yeah.
40% of the baskets that Zeller and Olynyk scored last year came off Evan Turner assists. And we just don't have a player that does that, both his ball distribution and his slashing to the basket.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Nick. As you know, I was a huge Evan Turner fan last year when many people I just think that his bad reputation never escaped him, although I think in the system that Brad Stevens run, he was a perfect fit. Was there anybody who wanted the ball more in the clutch than Evan Turner? And he came up big time and time again, and when Isaiah couldn't get the offense going, it was Turner who often carried the day for the Celtics, not just in hitting shots, but grabbing rebounds and distributing the basketball. I think he is sorely missed in this lineup, and I know the folks, and I'm on the West Coast here in the Seattle area, and I watch a lot of Blazer games, and he's had let's face it, he hasn't exactly had a great year with the Blazers. I think they're ready to run him out of town. But I wish we had him back. I really wish he was in a Celtic uniform. Thanks for pointing that out, Nick. It's something that we haven't really talked, at least I haven't talked about it a lot this year, but I think that he was the underrated guy in the Celtics a locker room last year. He was definitely the guy on the roster that I think that they could not afford to lose. And when you have a roster that's thin to begin with guys that can score the basketball and penetrate, that's a loss that sticks out. So I couldn't agree with you more. And Calvin, I know, as I recall, you weren't as big a Turner fan as I was, but I think you got to agree, at least he could create offense.
For some reason I thought Nick Sesento hated Evan Turner. Maybe I'm inaccurate about that. But
No, sir. I was the biggest Evan Turner fan there was. I was always bumping Evan Turner, and to the point that Justin Poulin would ridicule me every single time I'd call in or I'd co-host or I'd produce the show and talk about mentioning Evan Turner. I was the Evan Turner guy. But I'll let you finish your point, just saying.
I'm sorry to disparage you there. I guess I added backwards. You were a huge Evan Turner supporter. I think that I took issue with some of his decisions late in games sometimes, but certainly he hit plenty of clutch shots. So I saw his value, and I think he was underrated as a defender. And I think, yeah, he certainly brought ball handling to that team in a way, off the bench, in a way that I think they're trying to develop in Rozier. He's not quite there as a player now, but, you know, this is the reason why we have early on in the season. I think if Rozier can become that guy, obviously he's not, you know, going to be Evan Turner, but if he can be a point guard who can pass the ball effectively and, you know, dribble into the lane and score in the lane, then that's going to help this team out tremendously. I think we should give him a little leeway in regards to developing that part of his game. I think that's really why you want to say you've soured on Marcus Smart, because, you know, with Marcus Smart, it's like the same old act, right? You sort of feel like you've seen this guy brick shot after shot, and, you know,
yes,
not really. I think he, if anything, you can argue he's taken a small step back defensively this season compared to what he was last season. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. I don't have the analytics in front of me, and it could just be that I'm biased because he seems to have escalated his flopping to, you know, ridiculous levels.
Sure.
So maybe that's why I don't feel like his game's been quite as good. But I don't. He doesn't have the intensity that he's.
It hasn't been as good. It hasn't been as good, Calvin. It hasn't. And I just think that we've seen this movie over and over and over again. And once in a while, we'll see. Not to make the movie analogy again, you know, Marcus Smart will provide this great trailer of this, you know, this blockbuster that's coming. That's never coming. It's never going to hit the big screen. Marcus Smart is going to be a below-average shooter who does some amazing things on the defensive end that make the highlight reel, that make us think he's a better player than what he really is. I mean, after what? This is year four, right? This is year four.
Yeah.
Okay. What improvement has he made on the offensive end? What? He still doesn't handle the ball well, as far as I'm concerned. He still doesn't finish at the rim. If he does finish at the rim, it's so damn ugly, I don't want to count it. I think we've seen this kid. I don't see where we're going to get the improvement that's going to be so significant that he's going to be a difference maker. I just don't see it. Maybe I'm being too hard on him. I mean, he is young, after all. What is he, 23, 24?
I think he's 24. This is just harkens my mind back to conversations I would have about, you know, 28-year-old Rajon Rondo or Celtics fans were telling me he could still get better.
No.
Yeah. It's like, when do you feel like, okay, like the upside on this guy is no longer there and this is what he is? It's hard to say, right? I mean, it doesn't feel like he's getting better, but if he did become a great shooter, that would make a huge difference on this team. You know, I don't know how much better his ball handling is going to get, although it seemed to me early on in the season that his passing had improved, at least his court vision, which was something that I didn't think was going to happen, but it seems to have regressed back to what it was previously. So I don't know with him.
Calvin,
at
some point, I think you are who you are. I was never a huge fan of Rondo, although I will say this. In 2010, he played the most amazing stretch of basketball I've ever seen in the NBA playoffs. That was the year the Celtics had no business playing the Lakers. I mean, he carried them during the early rounds. But anyhow, the idea that somehow he was going to go to Chicago and he was going to have a second coming, and, you know, then he has issues with Hoiberg and he's not having a particularly great year. At some point, you are who you are. And I would think we're in year four here. We should be able to look at Marcus Smart and point to something that he has significantly improved at. We can't. The one guy I'll contrast him with is Avery Bradley. Now, maybe I'm biased because right now I'm sitting in Tacoma, Washington, which is Avery Bradley's hometown. I know his trainer. I can tell you this. Every offseason, Avery Bradley works his ass off to get better. And look at the improvement he has made year to year to year. What, tonight, guys, what did you, 25-10? I think were his numbers tonight, Nick. I don't have them in front of me. I'm just throwing those off at the top of my head. I think he had 25 points and 10 boards.
25-10. 25-10.
I mean, come on. This guy is a borderline all-star because he's worked for it. And you don't, when do you see Avery Bradley flopping around? Ever? No.
Never.
You don't see him doing any of that nonsense.
25-10 with 6 assists and 3 steals. And just to make a quick correction, this is year 3 of Marcus Smart's career. He's about to turn 23 years old, so he's not quite 24. He's not quite 23 yet.
Okay.
He still has about 80 days, I think, looking at Basketball Reference before he turns 23.
Okay.
So he's still – but you bring up a great point. I asked this question. I'm going to jump off real quick after this. I asked this question to some of the hosts a couple of nights ago. What is Marcus Smart's go-to offensive move? What is his go-to offensive move? Other than going 0 for 4 from 3, which he seems to do quite frequently, 0 for 4 from 3, what does he do? What is his offensive move? Does he have a go-to offensive move? Somebody told me, oh, well, he sticks his head down and tries to draw the foul, but he's shooting 58% from the free throw line, so that's not even a...
Right. What's the point then, right? What's the point in drawing the foul if you can't even make the free throw?
Exactly.
I hope I'm... Am I being too hard on him, guys? I'm so frustrated. I see this kid who has amazing athletic talent. I get so tired of him jacking up threes. I get tired of the flops. Maybe that's exaggerated. I don't know. But I really, at this point, want to give the playing time to Rozier because I see just a much bigger upside for the Celtics in the long run. I don't know. I just, maybe I'm just frustrated because the team's at 500 and I thought they would be better at this point, and I'm looking for a scapegoat. I'll tell you what, let's go to break. If you want to get involved in the conversation on the CLNS radio game show, give us a call at 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. Ty Ray, Calvin Chamberlain, Nick Sesento. Celtics lose tonight at San Antonio, 108-101, despite a great performance by Avery Bradley, 25-10. But it wasn't enough, as many guys on the Spurs were drinking from the Fountain of Youth tonight, including Tony Parker in that fourth quarter to lead San Antonio to victory. We'll be right back.
Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's always important to know where your food comes from. I'd like to take a moment and tell you about Blue Apron. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Folks, for less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you only the best in variety, flexibility, and ease of use. The recipe cards are incredible. This month, I made pan-seared chicken and roasted fall vegetables with butter caper sauce, spicy lotus root and purple carrot stir-fry with sweet potato noodles, lemongrass roasted pork with Romanesco cauliflower and coconut rice. These entrees may sound complicated, but with Blue Apron's recipe cards, they are easy and fun and get the whole family involved. We'd love for you to try Blue Apron. Support the Celtics postgame show and the entire CLNS radio network. And guess what? It's not going to cost you anything. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping. All you have to do is go to blueapron.com/CLNS. You will love how it feels. You will love how it tastes. You will love creating incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. Again, no risk involved. 3 free meals, free shipping. That's blueapron.com/CLNS. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics now even more comprehensive than ever. From the Celtics postgame show, to the Garden Report, to CSL, and to Celtics Beat, CLNS Radio's Boston Celtics news feed provides narrated breaking news, game recaps, and news and notes for the NBA's winningest franchise, all provided in real time. Don't have the time to surf the web or search engines and plunge your head into your computer or smartphone to read up on all the latest on the Celtics? No problem. Multitask while listening to CLNS's Celtics news feed. And for the 2016-17 NBA campaign, the Boston Celtics pregame report with myself, Larry H. Russell, will be released on the news feed on game days at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, making it the first pregame report to air anywhere. We will give you a featured interview from someone providing opposing insight, pregame notes, and go on a Celtics draft pick watch, all in just 12 minutes or less. Available on the Boston Celtics news feed on iTunes and Stitcher, and the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app.
Hey, this is Nick Gelso, the founder of CLNS Radio, and I just want to take a moment to talk to you about Movement Watches. Movement Watches, if you haven't heard of this company, it started by two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches but couldn't afford them. So what did they do? They started their own company. As you know, CLNS Radio was founded by a bunch of Celtics fans way back in 2009, and from there we started a company that made a career out of it, so we can absolutely relate to the owners of Movement Watches. And let me tell you, I purchased the Chrono Gunmetal watch. This watch is so sleek, black stainless steel, it's light, it's versatile, it's great for dress occasions or even casual affairs. A little bit more about Movement Watches, they start at $95. I purchased the Chrome Gunmetal watch for under $100, and I know with the watch I purchased, you're looking at $400 to $500 in a department store. So give yourself a big discount right in time for the holidays. You can get 15% off today with free shipping, and if you don't like the watch, guess what? You can return it for free. All you have to do is go to movementwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Wait a second, even the name is cool. It's spelled MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Again, go to MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat.
Welcome back to the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics postgame show. The Seas fall tonight 108-101 at San Antonio. Six Spurs in double figures tonight, led by Kawhi Leonard with 26 points. Pau Gasol, man, I thought we were done with him when he was a Laker. Tonight, a double-double, 17 points and 13 rebounds. Great performances tonight also by Tony Parker, who came up clutch in the fourth quarter when it just seemed like the Seas might actually have a chance in this game. He had 16 points. And our old friend David Lee throwing up nearly a double-double with 8 points and 10 rebounds. Once again, Celtics lose, fall to 13-12 on the year, head home Friday to take on the Charlotte Hornets. And before we went to break, Calvin, we were having the Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart conversation, and you had some points you wanted to make about Marcus Smart.
Well, the main point I wanted to make about Marcus Smart is, you know, yes, we just talked about how he is what he is, and, you know, he might not have the upside that a guy like Rozier has, but I still think that if you look at what the Celtics did last year when they were successful, what they did, and something they're not doing as much this season, is just constant ball pressure, creating turnovers. The way this team can actually score, you know, we were talking about it earlier, how they're not scoring, is in the fast break, pushing the ball, running a faster pace, because this team is small. This team is small and quick. The reason guys like Olynyk and guys like Zeller had successful runs with this team last year is because the strength of them as players, especially as big men, is their cardio. Tyler Zeller is a great floor running center. Kelly Olynyk is a great floor running center who can space the floor consistently. I don't know if it's a nod to, you know, maybe the fact that Horford is a little bit less than that, although I think Horford can run the floor as well, that they're running a more conservative offense. But I think that's part of what's hurting this team, and a more conservative defense. But I think the problem with, you know, replacing Smart with Rozier is Rozier's not going to be able to play with Isaiah Thomas consistently. You can play them a little bit offensively because Rozier can sort of hit the three at a decent clip, and obviously having the extra ball handling out there is a good thing, but you already have to hide Isaiah on that end, which I think is fine when you're playing Smart at the three, with Bradley, and they're just crashing, you know, constantly crashing ball handlers, taking the ball away, and, you know, running to the other end. I think you can do that to a certain extent with those two out there, but if you take Smart out and you put Rozier in that situation, Rozier can't guard any swing players in the NBA.
He is
so
athletic,
really
though.
He's an athletic player. I feel like he might be able to guard, you know, a fair amount of the league shooting guards. But then you're creating a situation where Avery Bradley's always going to guard 6-7 guys. I just don't think you can do it. I don't think he's a terrible defender. I think he has team defensive issues, but I don't think you can do it with him and Isaiah on the floor at the same time for longer than small stretches. And if you're committed to having Isaiah as your point guard,
and right now it seems like that's what the Celtics are committed to doing. I think you to that for that reason, you also have to be committed to Marcus Smart getting more minutes than Rozier when Isaiah comes back.
I'm with you on this one, actually, Calvin. I definitely see the dilemma with having both Thomas and Rozier on the floor at the same time. But I agree with you about the Celtic offense and the lack of the fast break, the lack of going up and down the floor. To me, doesn't that just go hand in hand with the idea of we're going to shoot three-pointers? I don't see the movement of the ball like I did last year. I just don't see it. Maybe it's just the eye test. I don't have the numbers. I don't have the analysis to back that up. But I just see a stagnant offense this year. Your point is well taken. I miss seeing the guys like Olynyk and Zeller run the floor. I don't see that. I don't see that at all. And I wonder what's missing. What was the is there a change in philosophy with this team? Why change what was working?
Well, what seems to be missing, and I'm going to look it up now because this is the eye test for me, but what seems to be missing to me is creating turnovers. I think the Celtics were third in the league last year in creating turnovers, and that's so much of how they run their fast break. It's not like they're a great rebounding outlet team. Most of their ball pushing came off of just constant ball pressure, creating turnovers, leaking out, and now they don't seem to be. Yeah, they don't seem to be generating the same level of ball pressure. The Spurs didn't turn it over very much in this game at all. Maybe the Spurs are a bad example of a team that you can do that to, but they just don't seem to be creating those turnovers and then getting out in the lane.
Yeah, they're not clogging the passing lanes like they have in years past. There were some instances tonight where I think they got the Spurs in trouble, and playing a team like San Antonio is a great measuring stick, but it's just not there, and I really wish I could have a conversation with Brad Stevens and find out if there's a change in philosophy. Is it the fact that maybe there's been some personnel changes that have created this philosophy? I don't know. I'm with you. I think the team is way too conservative, and dare I say it, not nearly as fun to watch, quite frankly. And I've seen enough games this year. Is it fair, though? Is it really fair to make these criticisms knowing that they've barely played with their rotation? Is that fair? They haven't been able to be set in what they're doing.
I think it's somewhat fair. I've had this conversation too. I think it was closer to being fair, when they didn't have Horford or Crowder. I think we sort of saw in a couple game stretch where they had Horford, Crowder, and Isaiah. But I they still didn't completely seem to be back to me. Yeah, they had a good run against some mediocre teams, and you could say the opposite now, which is that they're playing some good teams that you wouldn't necessarily expect them to win last year either, although I think they would win some of them. But I think even beyond that, I think it is fair to look at the guys that have been there, the guys that have been healthy, or the guys who come back healthy, and then evaluate how they played compared to how they played last year. Like we said about Smart, I don't think his defense has been as good as it was last year, and I don't think that has anything to do with the fact that Isaiah is not playing, or anything. Yeah, you can say maybe the overall team defense was not as good because Crowder was missing. That was the common refrain. But we see it. Crowder's back now, and he's not the same player he was last year. Maybe you say that, he's still not healthy, but how long do you give Crowder that leeway of he's still working his way back from an injury? At a certain point, you have to say, well, he's not the player he was last year. Whether that's from injury or not, the reality is he's not that guy.
And at some point, too, Calvin, and I haven't really brought his name up much, Amir Johnson. I thought he was invisible tonight. I have been a huge defender of Amir Johnson. I like what he does. I like what he brings the team both on the court and in the locker room. But clearly, he's not as serviceable as he was last year. You don't expect the guy to get big numbers. But I was looking at his stats in the first half. It was like 1.1 rebound. 1.1 rebound against a team that wasn't playing with LaMarcus Aldridge. You need more than that from a guy down low. With the Spurs without Aldridge in the game, I think.
Yeah, and in his case, though, I I think the problem is slightly different. I think he's sulking a little bit because he's gotten his minutes cut. I've sort of seen him not quite put up the effort out there, which you can blame on him. But I think the other thing is that I don't think that he plays that well with Horford. I think Horford sort of takes away from what he does. But for whatever reason, the Celtics are committed to pairing Horford with another big man as much as possible. And, you know, I don't think they play well. You see Amir being pushed out to the three-point line and just standing out there and jacking up threes when Amir Johnson, to me, is most effective as a pick-and-roll player. You know, I think when he runs a pick-and-roll with Isaiah, it's fantastic. He's a great cutter to the basket. He you know, if you can find him inside, he can score on almost anybody. He's a decent offensive rebounder. I just think his space on the floor has sort of been hijacked by Horford, and he's being pushed out to the three-point line in Stevens' offense, and that's never going to be what he's good at.
It's really interesting you say that he may not be giving the effort, because I was noticing that tonight that he was just the invisible man, especially in that first half. And I've always liked Amir Johnson's lunch pail mentality. You know, he was never going to be a 20-10 guy, but he could certainly pull out a 10-10 on a given night and give you much needed rebounds and clutch points. And I just see his game tailing off. Now, I don't know if that's due to injury. I know he's always had foot problems, but I mean, they're paying him a lot of money to do very little right now. So you have to wonder how much longer he'll have in a Celtic uniform come the trade deadline, if there are any suitors for him. But I just feel, Calvin, right now that the team is just kind of meandering along, finding itself. And I'll be honest, while I certainly didn't expect the Celtics right now at this stage to be 10 games over 500, I never felt that they were that good. I just didn't expect them to be a team just kind of feeling their way right now. I'm not in panic mode like I'm sure a lot of Celtic fans are out there. I think a lot of Celtic fans, especially in the offseason after the Horford signing, I think they had really unrealistic expectations of where this team was at. I never thought they were going to be as good as Toronto, certainly. I mean, I thought they could be the third or fourth best team in the East, but certainly not an elite club, not without Ainge making a move to bring somebody else in to get to that level. But there may not be anybody at that. I mean, can we just go a post-game show without hearing DeMarcus Cousins? I'm not bringing him up because I'm not going to throw that scenario out there, but is there really anybody, Calvin, you think right now out there that can then elevate the Celtics to the level of, say, a Raptors? I'm not even saying the Cavaliers. I'm saying the Raptors.
Right. Yeah, you weren't around here for the hot Andrew Bogut debate that circulated these airwaves.
Really?
For a couple of
I'm glad I stayed away from that. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is there's not really anybody out there right now. I think a lot of teams are not really in a position to get rid of their players, unless we go back to like the Carmelo Anthony's, who's never going to leave New York, even if the Celtics wanted him. I'm sure you don't want him, but even if you did, he has a no trade clause and he's not going to Boston. So there's John Wall, but then John Wall doesn't really work with your Isaiah Thomas situation. So then what there are guys who I think could be available come the deadline that aren't really available right now once teams sort of get more frustrated and we see how it shakes out. But in terms of being as good as Toronto, I think that with the right tweaking, with this team sort of figuring out what their roles are, defining them, and with the Celtics, you know, making a few small moves to fix, sort of patch up their holes, like I said, ball handlers. If the Celtics did something as, you know, insignificant as adding, like, I don't know, like an Evan Fournier type, that they might be more interesting than they are right now.
I'd actually like a guy like Gallinari on the team. You talk about a guy that can slash the hoop and create his own shot, shoot from the outside. I don't know what his availability is, but somebody like that I hope would be available. But once again, I'm not talking about getting to a Cleveland level like I think a lot of Celtic fans are hoping. It's just not going to happen. I feel like a lot of Celtic fans this year have set themselves up for a letdown. It's all part of the process, and I know it's frustrating. I think right now we're seeing just how thin this team is, especially when when a guy like Isaiah Thomas goes down, we're really finding out what his value is. I think we've actually got a caller. Nick, do we have a caller?
Nick's not responding.
Let me let's go to the call line. Caller, you're on the air. I actually thought we had our one caller burning the midnight oil almost, 1 a.m. on the East Coast, but apparently not with us. Calvin, it's been it has been an up and down season. Have you enjoyed it, though? I mean, you've been a co-host on many post-game shows. Have you enjoyed the season so far? Has it been as fun as you thought it would be?
You know what? I mean, as a non-Celtics fan, I don't really it's hard for me to comment on this because I don't really mind either way if the Celtics win or lose as long as
right.
the game is interesting and entertaining. And for the most part, the Celtics games that I've seen this year have been, close. They've been come down to the wire. They've been exciting. I think once, it's sort of been a little too samey in what my criticisms are. So that's a little less interesting than having the real spark plug on the team. That's the other thing is that there's not really any super interesting personalities on this team to fascinate me the way a guy like Rondo would.
Yeah, well, what I do like about working with you, though, when we do these post-game shows is you're not a Celtic fan, and you can give a perspective that somebody who's way too close to the situation can't give, and you keep us honest. You keep us honest. I mean, I can remember years where like, oh, this team's on the rise. You guys, you're full of it, and we need that once in a while on the post-game show. Now, as a whole, I got a general NBA question for you. So tonight, the Cavaliers rest, I believe, LeBron. The Spurs rest Aldridge. I think there were some other rests tonight. What is your opinion on that as far as a product, the NBA as a league, allowing for that this early in the season?
Yeah, a lot of people don't like it because they, they argue that fans pay tickets for every game. But the thing about it is one, you pay to watch the team, okay? You can say, well, I just came to watch Tim Duncan, or I guess Tim Duncan's an outdated reference at this point. I came to watch LaMarcus Aldridge. But the fact of the matter is like the team, the team's under no obligation to play LaMarcus Aldridge. If he's hurt, for example, he's not going to be in the game. You can't just ask for your money back because he's out of the game. I think that it's good for the players to get rest every once in a while, considering what the schedule is. Just like when all of the rest of us take days off from work, we don't go into work every day of our lives. And if somebody takes a day off, nobody gets angry about it. If your boss decides, hey, you've been working too hard, I'm going to give you a day off and so you can be more productive in the long term, nobody from the outside looks at that negatively. But for some reason, because sports, there's this mentality of, this old school mentality of like put your nose to the grindstone and just constantly work, work, work. We criticize these people for really doing what's in the long term better for their bodies. So I don't really have a problem with it. Yeah, if it's a consistent thing, which I really haven't seen it happen, if LaMarcus Aldridge was playing once every two games, then or if he just skipped 30 games, and so that way he'd only play 50 games and be ready for the playoffs, then that extreme would create a situation where I'd be critical of it. But every now and again, if a player needs to take a game off, I don't have a problem with it.
I mean, I see your point, but I'm not paying $1,000 for floor seats to watch me in a cubicle. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I see where you're going with that, but at the same time, I know I'd be kind of pissed off if I made the run to the Rose Garden to see the Blazers and Damian Lillard, took a seat. So let's go to Sam in San Diego. We're going to wrap up the show here pretty quick. It's getting a little late on the East Coast. But let's go to Sam in San Diego. He wants to talk about Jaylen Brown. Sam, great talking to you.
You too, Ty. That's why I'm calling in.
Oh, terrific.
Sounded like you guys wanted a caller, so I thought I'd do
it. We're getting lonely.
Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to mention, after about a week of looking terrible out there, all of a sudden Jaylen Brown looks fantastic. I was disappointed after he played so well in the first half that we didn't really see him. I don't think he played the whole third quarter. I started looking for him. And I was disappointed to not see him come into the fourth because he played so well. I thought he really looked good out there, and he was really helping us. And another thing I wanted to point out was, Huey Brown mentioned on the telecast, the same thing we all say is that they hit the droughts because it's all three pointers, you know. So we just kind of go through the lulls as we get hot and get cold, and so we just kind of get back in the game, and then we get down 10 again. So, you know, that's kind of disappointing. But, you know, last thing is just going back to Brown is, you know, I think the biggest thing is that he's playing well. We should start giving him more minutes and really incorporate him in so that by the end of the season, he's not only grown but becomes a factor, because he looks fantastic right now.
Calvin, what are your thoughts on that? I actually agree with Sam on this. I think that in limited minutes, Jaylen Brown has really played well. He's been a bright spot in the last couple of weeks for the Celtics.
Yeah, Brown is an interesting case, and I'm curious, actually more curious to know what you guys think about it. I mean, you tie in the sense that, like, what do you do when you're a coach when you're trying to integrate a rookie into your team while also trying to win games? You know, it's easy for me as a Lakers fan to say the Lakers should play all their young guys as many minutes as possible, but you look at Brown out there, to me, he's up and down. There are times when he makes amazingly athletic plays. He gets the block, and then he goes down to the other end and he gets a dunk. He's fast, he's athletic, but he also makes plenty of dumb plays. He makes careless turnovers, or he just defensive lapses. I think that he has played better, but you saw what happened early in the season. They gave him, you know, they gave him minutes with the starters. He made a lot of mistakes, and Brad Stevens immediately pulled back from that. How much would you be committed to making Brown happen this season as opposed to playing the long game with
him? You know, he was the third pick in the draft. You traded away legends to get a player like Jaylen Brown, right? He was one of the picks used by, you know, from the Nets trade with Garnett and Pierce that was so controversial. You got to play him, I think. It's the investment you made in the future. The future is now. You've got to play and develop him now. And you mentioned, yeah, he's made quite a bit of mistakes on the court. So have a lot of other people, I think, this year. And don't get me started. Once again, we're going to go into the Marcus Smart debate. And I don't want to go there, but I think you got to let him play. I think if you're looking for a player, and we were talking about this earlier, Calvin, a guy that possibly can create his own shot and drive to the hoop, I think arguably he's the Celtics' most athletic player. Why not let him develop?
Well, let me create a more specific hypothetical for you, because I'm really interested in this as a thought experiment. Let's say the difference between playing Jaylen Brown 15 or 30 minutes a game is the difference between the Celtics being a 3 or a 6 seed. But when you play him those 30 minutes of a game, he develops into a player much faster than he'd otherwise develop. Do you play him those minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. Because to me, there's not the tremendous difference between being the 3 and the 6, especially with the Cavaliers being that dominant in the conference. No, you let him develop.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
I like your comment.
Hey, Calvin, if I can jump in, this is Nick again. If I can jump in real quick, I think the fact that Jaylen Brown only got 11 minutes, and I think that's what Sam was getting at, was that he only got 11 minutes, and he didn't even play very much towards the end of the game. The fact that Jay Crowder's playing the 3, and he seems to be relatively sluggish, he's camping out at the 3-point line, he's rebounding fairly well, but he doesn't really have the offense in terms of getting to the hoop, as opposed to Jaylen Brown, who can, you know, who seems to have dribbles, he can get the ball somewhere towards, you know, the perimeter, and within two dribbles, within a dribble, really, within two steps, one dribble, he can get to the basket. Maybe try experimenting with, you know, putting Jay Crowder at the 4, since Amir Johnson isn't doing anything for us anyway. Try putting Jay Crowder at the 4 where he's not having to compete with faster, more athletic 3s, and then put Jaylen Brown at the 3, and then, you know, let Jaylen Brown get those minutes there. That way you don't really have to lose anybody that's really contributing. Take Amir Johnson out. Put Jay Crowder at his position at the 4. Let, you know, Al Horford continue to play the 5, and even though he doesn't want to, he said that he would rather play the 4, but he just has to play that position. I know Calvin doesn't like to talk the positional things. And then let Jaylen Brown play the 3, get more minutes at the 3, because 7 points and, I think, 3 rebounds in 11 minutes, he's producing. He's showing us something. And he could develop with a little bit more time, but he's not going to be very productive with us in only 11 minutes or 4 minutes as he was getting a few games earlier. So I think you could adjust the rotations, get him, you know, if not, you know, 25 minutes a game, 20 minutes a game by, you know what I'm saying, moving Jay Crowder up to the 4, taking Amir Johnson out, you know, and then letting Jay Brown play the 3.
I like the idea. I like the idea a lot. We're talking about the third player taken in the draft, correct? We're not talking about the 16th player taken in the draft. You've got an investment in this player. You've got to play him now. He is our future. He is the Celtics' future. Let's see what he has.
Hey, Ty. The thing we just established is that we're on a clock because we've got guys like Thomas and Bradley that are going to come up on contract soon. So we have to get to where we're going to get to soon. And second of all, we know that we need a superstar. So we're either going to trade for one or develop him. So we've got this guy here and he's the number three pick. We have to develop him now. I don't see it any other way.
I'm with Calvin on this. I don't care if I'm the six or the three seed. The Cavaliers are so damn good. I'm not going to beat them anyway. The Celtics are not. Let's make this clear. The Celtics are not as good as the Raptors. It's that simple. I mean, DeRozan is a great player. Kyle Lowry is a terrific player. So why not develop Jaylen Brown now? Why not? So
I'm on board.
That's just my
last thing. I rarely root for the Lakers, and today I rooted for them, and they could not come through against Brooklyn. So I was really disappointed, Calvin.
What happened there, Calvin?
Yeah, well, the Lakers are just in a downward spiral. The likes of which they're going back to, I guess, what the expectation was of them before the season. At least they've had a lot of injuries, and they're sort of working their way back from that. So I guess I'm not ready to fully say they're horrible again, but right now they're playing pretty horribly.
They've got a lot of potential. Thanks. Sam, thanks for calling in, man. Always fun.
Thank you, Ty and Calvin. Go Celtics.
Yeah, go Celtics. Let's wrap this up, guys. Celtics lose tonight 108-101 to the San Antonio Spurs. Avery Bradley, 25 points, 10 rebounds in defeat. The Spurs with six players in double figures, and really they were never threatened in the contest. Celtics back in action Friday night at home in the Garden against Charlotte. Calvin, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think it was a tough loss in San Antonio, but they didn't play horribly. I guess I'm doing the whole victory thing, which is stupid. But this team needs to make a move. It'll be interesting to see. They have a lot of assets. They don't need to hurt their team that much. I think you talked about Amir earlier. He's sulking. I think part of the reason for that is he has that contract that the Celtics are probably going to move. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. No more moral victories. We talked about moral victories 2 years ago. I cheered the Celtics on as they fought hard every game and came up short. Well, the expectations are a little bit higher than that. But as always, Calvin, great fun being on the show with you. Nick, any final thoughts on your end?
Yeah, I hate to close the final thought since on a trade, but since it's been kind of, floating around in the discussion tonight, and Calvin mentioned, maybe making a move in Amir Johnson, maybe being one of those players, and I sure hope that $12 million contract, even though it's expiring, I sure hope that contract is one of the contracts that gets moved by the deadline. There are a few players that are out there that could possibly be available. I know there's some CLNS personalities that have been on the Moose bandwagon, Greg Monroe.
No.
He's been relegated to the bench, but if you look at, and his minutes have been cut severely over there in Milwaukee, but if you look at his per 36 production, he's rebounding better than he ever has in his career. His assists are higher than they ever have per 36, and he's actually very good at stealing the ball. Even in his limited minutes, he's averaging over a steal per game, even in his 19 minutes per game playing for Milwaukee. Something like that. So it's not that his defense, he's not a great rim protector. And we have Al Horford who's blocking at the highest clip that he has in his career. So we don't, not that we don't need another rim protector, it'd be nice, but, Greg Monroe could fill that spot in terms of grabbing rebounds, being that real post player that we actually, could use, need, that Al Horford doesn't seem to want to be. I don't know why Al Horford isn't, seems to have an aversion to playing down in the post, but Greg Monroe could be that guy. Other players, for example, Willie Cauley-Stein, I think, maybe on the block, Omri Caspi, two Sacramento Kings. either of those two guys, could possibly fill a role. I wish that Danny Ainge had pulled the trigger on the Jahlil Okafor trade.
I like that move, too. I like that move, too.
For Marcus Smart in a pick, because I just don't – even though this draft is supposedly going to be a very thick draft, very, thick with talent, I just don't necessarily trust Danny Ainge with these picks. We look at Marcus Smart, who was one of his picks. He picked him with the sixth pick in the draft, and not really all that great. Jared Sullinger, a pick, just walked out the door for nothing. Kelly Olynyk is in his fourth year. His rookie contract is expiring, and it looks like Kelly Olynyk, if we don't re-sign him, might be walking out the door for nothing. R.J. Hunter walked out the door for nothing. James Young isn't doing anything. I'd rather Danny Ainge trade that pick, package him with Marcus Smart, and get a decent big man or another ball handler, if that's what he really wants to do. Somebody that can improve this team by the deadline and can make this team good now. And I'm just going to end my rant like this. It's not just that we're coming up on contracts for Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas, who are going to be demanding upwards of $20 million, if not max contract. We also just signed Al Horford, a player over 30 years old, to a four-year contract. I believe it's 4 years. And we probably have about another two seasons of Al Horford at this level before he really starts to decline. And he's already declining it on the boards in other ways in terms of his offensive production, kind of hanging out, camping out by the three-point line. We do have a window here. And I don't think that we paid Al Horford just to be kind of a stopgap for the next 3 or 4 years until, you know, our young players develop. Maybe that was Ainge's plan. I don't know. But we seem to have these players that are here now. Why not make a trade? And if one of those players has to be Marcus Smart, you know, packaging a Smart and a pick to get a player that can help us this year, I would do it. And it's not because I dislike Marcus Smart that much, even though I do. But I think that it would be the proper move to make to help this team win now, because we have some really solid pieces. We just need to get a couple, you know, one extra player that can make an impact, one more impact player. And I think that we have some extra pieces to get that done. And I think Marcus Smart might be the guy to do that, along with
all
the
right,
pick.
All right, Nick. Well said. And I agree with your sentiments. The Celtics definitely missing another piece of the puzzle. Let's wrap this up. The post-game show will be available on demand listening by searching for the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics post-game show on iTunes and Stitcher, as well as the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app. Follow CLNS on social media at CLNS Radio on Twitter. Like us on Facebook.com/CLNSFans. Also at ESPNRadioNH.com, at ESPNNH on Twitter, and /ESPNNewHampshire on Facebook. Today's show was brought to you by Blue Apron. Go to blueapron.com/CLNS for 3 free meals and free shipping. Also, our friends at Movement, pronounced Movement, MVMTWatches.com/CelticsBeat for 15% off your first purchase with free shipping, as well as Audible, audiblepodcast.com/try now for 30-day trial of audiobooks. It's a good service. Trust me on this one. Music was provided by Joshua Morse. We want to thank today's callers and everyone who's tuned in. And for CLNS executive producer Larry H. Russell, program director Justin Poulin, the founder of CLNS Network, Nick Chelso. I am Ty Ray. For my co-host, Calvin Chamberlain, and producer Nick Sesento, we are out of here. See you Friday night back at the Garden when the Celtics take on the Charlotte Hornets. Celtics lose 108-101 at San Antonio.